Greetings to you, sisters and brothers. This is Steve Muhammad coming to you from Refuge Depot. As we all know, the weather is extreme. We need to prepare our homes to become a sanctuary and not a cemetery. Please go to refugedepot.com or click in the description below to find all your disaster preparedness items and survival techniques. That's refugedepot.com or click in the description below. If you have any questions, please call 937-985-0779 or email refugedepot@gmail.com. Now I have the honor of introducing to you our guest speaker for today. It is Professor Taylor Curtis, and I'll go ahead and read her bio. Professor Taylor Curtis is a dynamic, strategic, big picture thinker with a proven record of accomplishments. As the United States of America's youngest known tenured assistant professor, Taylor Curtis is exceptionally skilled in teaching and providing student instruction in psychology, social justice, equity, specific to Black studies, and anti-racism. Please welcome with me, Professor Taylor Curtis.
I am here today to talk to you about Black women versus the American healthcare system. I say American lightly because we use this term very loosely, as if American is referring to only those in North America and the United States of America, as if we don't have several other countries and systems of Americas on this side of the earth. If you go to another country, they may look at you a little strange when you say that you are American, as they ponder whether you are from South America, Central America, Canada, Mexico, or the US. As we talk about this, I want you to recognize that this is not limited to the Black woman. A lot of what we talk about is going to circle around what we call intersectionality, and it's going to be applicable to many different walks of life. But we're centering on the Black woman today, as that is something that we do not talk about nearly enough. Now, that term I used, intersectionality, is something that we use often in psychology and sociology to talk about the different parts of us that intersect to make us us. Indeed, I stand before you in a skirt. That does not mean I am only woman. I might look a certain way because of my ethnic heritage, but I am not limited to just that. Group memberships for intersectionality might be your ethnicity or your gender. It might also be your sexual orientation or your nationality, your religion, your socioeconomic status, meaning how much money you make, because that does play a role in how you're able to navigate society. We could look at our ability or disability status, physically and mentally, regarding disorders or conditions that we might have. We can talk about our affiliations, because sometimes that plays a role in who we are as well. But all of these things overlap, and they work together to make us us. However, all of these different areas all function differently in society. Some of these areas may function at a higher level where they have more salience or ability to navigate a lot easier than others. We say that because some of these groups have what we call privilege. Now, privilege is a dirty word around these parts. When people say privilege, they immediately think money and they go, no, 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 no. I did not have any of that. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I struggled, or I had to work really, really hard. I had to get it up out of the mud, or I had a lot of different things go wrong in my life. That's not what we mean by privilege.
Right.
Privilege is referring to some type of immunity, some type of special right or an advantage that you have just because of the group that you belong to. When we look at this list of intersectionality, we could talk about areas where we know different groups carry privilege. If your gender, for example, is male, perhaps you were born with testes, not only is there privilege in some of the different monthly issues you may not have to deal with that some of us with ovaries deal with, but there's also privilege because society has granted men the right to make decisions that women are not allowed to make, whether that decision was whether they could go to school and graduate, whether they could vote, whether they could pay for certain feminine products that they need. All of these decisions were made by men. All of the rules were made by men, and they were maintained by men in a way that disproportionately impacted women and created a disparity for women that does not exist for men. Now, granted, we could talk about other genders that now exist, and we could talk about many other issues. But again, today's focus is on the woman. When we look at other areas of intersectionality, we can look at our nationality. Those who are born here in the United States have special rights and advantages that other people don't have. If you've ever watched 90 Day Fiancé, you'll see people who have to get a visa to come here to marry the person that they love, or for you to go to another country to marry that person. But that visa does not allow you the right to work. So imagine trying to start a family and only one income is even allowed to begin with. There are different advantages that we see regarding religion. Obviously, in this part of the world, those who reflect any type of Christian faith, regardless of whether that is Catholicism or whether that is Mormonism or whether that is Lutheran or Protestant or Baptist, it does not really matter what denomination or what focus of Christian faith. Those who believe in God and who have a Christian faith in this country are treated with advantages as opposed to someone who is atheist or someone who is Muslim. When we look at socioeconomic status, we all know that the money plays a role and that money provides opportunities that everyone is not always granted. We also recognize that when it comes to race, there is no such thing. It's a human concept that was made up by the human race as a means to categorize individuals so that one can hold power and the other cannot. But the reality is that if we tested all of your genes today, we would recognize that they all go back to Black people in Africa, all coming from the same lineage. And we could also recognize that that means that we are all connected.
Yes.
And despite those connections we all have, unfortunately, we don't view those connections one in the same. And because of that, and because of intersectionality, there are some people that have more disadvantages than others. For example, for me to be Black and to be woman means that not only am I going to have difficulty navigating the world as a woman who is not white, but I will also have difficulty navigating as a woman. We're going to talk a little bit about what that looks like. When it comes to ability or disability, if you walked in here today, if you can stand up on your own two feet, you have a privilege that no one else has to think about. You don't have to think about whether or not this grocery store has a ramp for you to wheel yourself in. You don't have to think about whether the bathroom is wide enough for your wheelchair to get into that friend's house. You don't have to think about whether that transportation is going to be able to carry everything that you come with. That's something that we don't think about if that's the case. Some of us are visually impaired. That would be me. I don't know how people wake up just seeing every day and not realize how amazing that is when I wake up and I look really, really odd trying to figure out who's who and what's what.
That's right.
as we look at all of these different areas, we recognize that privilege is a very important thing. It gives you a voice in areas where you otherwise may not have one. It gives you a responsibility in areas where other people don't have the same responsibility. And when we look at our intersectionality, we see that the Black woman has been under attack for more reasons than one for a very, very long time. Now, when we look at what that attack looks like, it looks like dominance. Dominance comes in many different shapes and forms, but it's designed to maintain power while the other group does not have that same power. You ask a powerful person what's their biggest fear, it would probably be to lose power. And when you ask other people who hate different groups, why do they hate them? Got something to do with that power. So techniques of dominance often start with creating an internal perspective. And that internal perspective forms in ways that we like to call prejudice and stereotypes. Prejudice is this internal attitude. It's a negative attitude, and it is unfair towards a particular group just because of who they are. And when you look at prejudice, we must admit that yes, we all have them. And I often tell my class and my students when I'm teaching, you know, everybody raise your hand, and they all raise their hand, and I say, repeat after me. And I say, I have prejudice. And they usually get to I have, and they're like, now wait just a minute. What do you want me to admit to? And I tell them, I want you to admit the truth. We all have been inundated with information from the time we were children until the time that you're listening to the sound of my voice. We have been socialized by our society to believe certain things, to understand things in a certain way, and to carry certain perspectives. And those perspectives have all been shaped by the things that we see, the things that we hear, and the things that we experience, whether they are direct or indirect. So whether it was a joke, oh man, you hit like a girl. That's a message. It's a common joke. We hear it often. You hit like a girl, you swing like a girl, you throw like a girl. And the underlying message is what? That women are weak. And you're being weak right now. For a little girl to hear that joke, she's receiving a message about herself that she may not even be consciously computing, but she's receiving it within her. That life force energy, our spirit soaks those things up. And then you wonder why teen girls struggle so much with their identity and self-esteem. When we look at prejudice, that negative attitude, oh, we've definitely seen it towards women. Women can't do this, they can't do that. And one of the easiest ways to identify it is if you take a man out on the road and watch him drive. Most prejudice towards women, Asian drivers, and elderly people come out on the road because people go, why is she turning like that? It's gotta be a woman. When we see that negative attitude go unchecked, it becomes negative actions. So it's okay to admit that we have prejudice, but what's not okay is to let us go on every day without thinking that we have to bring that into submission. When we look at individual and institutional ways that we see prejudice taking place, we end up seeing doctors who make assumptions that this Black woman doesn't quite feel the same amount of pain as this white woman. Therefore, we're not going to prescribe her the medication she's requesting. You know there's an epidemic going on, right? What this might look like within a scientist is, this is for research, instead of looking at someone as a human being. What it might look like in legislation with your legislators is one of my very interesting quotes from your US Ohio senator. of last year. Why do colored people have coronavirus so much more? Is it because they don't wash their hands?
I understand that African Americans have a higher incidence of chronic conditions, and that makes them more susceptible to death from COVID. But why does not make them more susceptible just to get COVID if we know it's twice as often? Correct. Could it just be that African Americans or the colored population do not wash their hands as well as other groups, or wear masks, or do not socially distance themselves? Could it just be the explanation of why the higher incidence?
That legislator, our senator, was also an emergency room doctor. When we look at our judicial system, our healthcare system, our educational system, what we see embedded from the curriculums and the textbooks to the way the information is presented, to the way that you're graded, to the way that you are promoted, graduated, suspended, detentionized. I don't know what's the word for that. We just made it up. It's detentionized today. When we do all of these different things, that prejudice comes peeking through throughout every step. So when you grow up learning that your history starts with slavery, you start off with inferiority. When you grow up learning that women weren't allowed and that's girls don't do that, you start off with inferiority. So imagine the Black woman as she progresses through life in a world that sees her as a double threat. When we look at the way prejudice comes through, not only does it come through in our internal perspective and how we carry ourselves, our demeanor, our thoughts, our attitude in that moment, our body language towards individuals, it also comes through in our stereotypes, these generalizations that we have about people just because they belong to that group. And so we repeat these things in terms of jokes or just in talking and conversation, or we depict them on our TV shows and our movies, in our books, in our music, and in other areas, until people believe that this generalization really applies and creates this monolithic group that everyone's supposed to belong to. What does that look like institutionally? It might look like a textbook where this textbook was actually from Pearson, the publishers Pearson. Their textbook was, I think, like flagged and pulled off the shelves in 2017 because of this chart where it said, here are some things that you should know, nursing students, medical students, doctors and nurses and surgeons, about specific groups of people. For people who are Arab or Muslim, you need to know that they should not and may not request pain medication because they're going to thank Allah for the pain as if that is the result of a healing medical procedure. For Jewish individuals, they may be vocal and demanding of assistance. They believe that pain must be shared and validated by others. If you're an upcoming nurse or a doctor, you might have just learned to ignore someone's extreme issues or to expect not to treat individuals, which means you may not offer treatment, which means you're not going to listen to the symptoms, which means you're going to go back to, they're loud and demanding. That's what my medical professional teacher taught me, right? For Hispanics, it said, which is funny, Hispanics, right? The term Hispanic comes from people who are from Spain or Spanish descent, but really Latinos usually don't take to this term Hispanic because the US census data likes to lump Hispanics with white. Wow. And so they maintain status of saying that these individuals maintain majority when they start giving you the numbers, right? So Hispanics may believe that pain is a form of punishment and that suffering must be endured if they are to enter heaven. They vary widely in their expression of pain. Catholic Hispanics may turn to religious practices. It goes on and on and on and on and on. When it comes to people who are Black, The idea that we do not feel pain is there. This idea that because of the melanin in our skin, that there must be a level of thickness to our skin that differs from other people. The idea that perhaps if you were to scrape that skin away, there would still be darker layers underneath, as if we don't all bleed red. It's actually really scary to know that this is common in our medical fields and our healthcare system, and that stereotypes not only are harmful because this is what you believe, but they're harmful because they then impact our behaviors. From there, the next technique of dominance that we see expressed is discrimination. And discrimination is the unjust or prejudicial treatment of different categories of people. It could look like excluding, where we're going to do the research about how this disease impacts people, but we're not going to see how it impacts this group of people. Which, by the way, when we look at some of the dermatologist books, we actually see that Black people's skin is not depicted with most diseases. And so the melanin in our skin causes diseases to show up a lot differently, but your dermatologist may not have learned how to distinguish because of the textbooks that exist. Oh, but don't worry, if you're a Black man, you will definitely have luck because Black men are depicted the most when we look at sexually transmitted diseases within those textbooks. Discrimination might also look like ignoring. I have a story about that later that I'll share. It might also look like avoiding, where maybe they avoid asking you certain questions because they don't feel like doing the dance, whatever that means. It might be threatening. One of my experiences that I'll share now is that I'm an asthmatic. I have asthma, and so that means that there are moments where my breathing becomes difficult, and I've had an asthma attack. I also am a psychologist, and I've also had panic attacks. And if you know anything about one or the other or the two, what you would know is that they increase your physiological arousal, you have shortness of breath, your heart is beating really, really fast. You could pass out. A lot of times people do. Some people could stop breathing and all these other horrible things that could happen. So I had a panic attack and an asthma attack at 4 a.m. and I live approximately a block over from an emergency room. So I was able to get someone on the phone enough to calm me down enough to get to the emergency room. When I got there, because I was dressed in sweats and my hair was probably, in a ponytail or something like that, not only did they see a Black woman, but they saw a young Black woman that they didn't think could advocate for herself. When I told them exact medications that I needed and exact treatment that I need, because I'm an asthmatic and we all know what we need, they told me, "You're fine. You don't need any medication. You can actually go home." And not only were they ignoring me, but that was threatening because my life was at risk. We also see discrimination come in the terms of ridiculing. I can't tell you how many individuals have shared their stories of being at the doctors and not being treated properly, or their business being told out loud, or all these other things. Jokes, slurs, violence, unfair treatment, all of these things are forms of discrimination. And they are presented not only by the individual with individual interactions, but also in the system, within the policies, within the practices, within the things that have become the standards and the norms, and within the foundation of how a lot of these processes came to be. One of the most common ways we see the attack of Black women is through microaggression. Microaggression can be verbal. It can be environmental. It could be behavioral. It could be on purpose and unintentional. And all of these things are communicating some type of derogatory message to the minority individual. And for Black women, we experience this all too often, whether it's in some type of obsession about the way that our bodies are shaped. What they call her now, Sarah Bardige, who was paraded around Europe as a circus act, where they molested her, groped her, raped her on stage in front of crowds because her voluptuous Black body was just so different. Even down to using her body as a display in a museum for people to see. We also see microaggression coming when people have these conversations about your appearance. I found it very interesting that the Black woman doctor I used to see, most of her stuff, most of her services were all centered around changing your body instead of just taking care of the one that you naturally have been given. We find that sometimes this looks like us being that exhibit where we want to touch and stroke and experience. But a lot of times it also comes just in those ways of indignities. I don't see color when clearly you know the difference between red and yellow. Or, of course, everyone can have everything that they need. You know, healthcare is accessible to everybody when they know that there are particular things that are set and instituted to make it more difficult for people of color to achieve. This goes to the isms. The isms, racism, sexism, ageism, ableism, all the isms come down to is a very simple formula: power plus prejudice. When you have that negative attitude towards individuals who are different or who belong to a certain group, and you add institutional power, you now have an ism. Just think, you never call a woman sexist. She could hate men and be prejudiced. She could most certainly discriminate. She could believe in stereotypes. She could enact microaggression. Not really with men because they really don't count. But when that happens, she's just being prejudiced. When the roles are reversed, he has the institutional power on his side, whether he wants to benefit from it or not. It's not a choice. We've been put into these positions for a reason. We must learn how to use the position. As a woman who understands these positions, Harriet Washington took it upon herself to write the book Medical Apartheid.
Right.
I would encourage you to get this book and read this book if you haven't already. It's less than $20 on Amazon, but it will give you a lot of clarity into understanding what happens when the system is embedded with racism. Medical apartheid was her way of exploiting all of the surgeries, procedures, tools, autopsies, dissections, exploitations, deaths, harm, lies, and more of people of color at the hands of the United States healthcare system. Willie Lynch was a guy they said wrote a letter. And if you read that letter, you'll hear one plantation owner sharing with other plantation owners ways to avoid losing property. They wanted to salvage the issues that they saw where they had to kill individuals who were enslaved because they just would not acquiesce. And so William Lynch came up with these different ways that we see in place today. And although people debate whether William Lynch was real or not, it doesn't matter because we see the evidence right here in our faces. Willie Lynch said, "Break the body and keep the mind." His goal was to divide Black men versus Black women, older versus younger, all of these different aspects and characteristics that we have, light skin versus dark skin, coarse hair versus thin hair, all of these different aspects that he used. And one of the things he said was to attack the Black woman. Because when you attack the Black woman and when you destroy the Black man in front of her, not only is it an attack on him, it's an attack on her, and she will break the children for you. And she will keep the cycle going in a way that this system would last hundreds of years. Hundreds of years later, we still aren't free. Federal lynching is legal. Slavery under the 13th Amendment is legal. We see lynching on our streets daily, and we see apartheid as it's happening right here in our U.S. healthcare system. When we look at Harriet Washington's book that she wrote in 2006, she outlines many different individuals. And as you start to do research yourself, you will see many different individuals who have had these experiences. Keep this image in your mind. We're going to take a look at some of these experiences and what that looks like. When we look at discrimination and the isms in our healthcare system, we can look at different time frames and different specific things that happen that just give you a snapshot of what it has looked like behind the scenes. If you look at the Old South in the 1840s and the 1850s, you would hear about Samuel Cartwright. He was for slavery, and he created a couple of different mental health disorders specific to Black individuals. Drapetomania was one of them that said enslaved Black people develop an uncontrollable urge to run away. Right. Imagine that. And he created suggestions of treatment, which included, and I quote, beating the devil out of them. Right. Amputation of toes was also a suggestion. He also came up with another mental health disorder that explained the lack of work ethic exhibited by individuals who were enslaved. He also would suggest to work them hard in the sun, as that would somehow get them the energy that they needed. When we look into 1876, just a few years later, we can look at someone that you all may have heard of as the father of modern gynecology. J. Marion Sims actually was the president of the American Medical Association. So when you think about your presidents of the American Medical Association, you would imagine someone who has a heart, who is caring, who wants to take care of their patients. I don't think you would imagine someone who had 3 months of training, two dead patients, and then went on to begin to pry apart the skulls of Black children because he believed that their skulls grew too quickly around their brain. So he would use a shoemaker's tool to loosen their skulls. Children. We have been under attack since birth. Not only did he do this, he also began experimenting. So ladies who go to the gynecologist and understand the role of a gynecologist to do checks to make sure that your reproductive system and all organs are functioning and behaving properly, all of the tools that you see utilized on you today were created by J. Marion Sims. He did surgeries on women without their consent, without anesthesia, and without proper treatment. He did a host of horrible things to these women. And as we all cringe about them in reading these books of the 1870s, The American government has done the same thing to the women at our borders.
That's right.
Within the last year. And of course, this individual right here is Vertus Hardeman. When Vertus Hardeman was 5 years old, not much older than the babies in the back, in Lyle Station, Indiana, Vertus Hardeman and 9 other children were told that they were dealing with an experiment about a cure for ringworm. Their school had them sign up. When they went to this ringworm experiment that the parents agreed to unsuspectingly, they ended up getting performed an extreme radiation experiment on those babies that the U.S. government performed because they were black and isolated. It literally left holes in the children's head because it dissolved their bone matter. And they had to grow up, those who survived, living like this. Did y'all hear me say they went to the baby's school and recruited through the school to the parents? Fill out this form. How often do we fill out this form without even questioning what's happening? We can look at more of the isms by looking at individuals like that of the Tuskegee experiment in Tuskegee, Alabama. From 1932 to 1972, over a 40-year span, the United States of America stood back and stood by. They stood back and stood by observing black men deteriorate and die because of the sexually transmitted disease, syphilis. They checked to see if the men had syphilis first, and those who did have syphilis were accepted into the program, and they disguised their services as health care. They offered hot meals. They offered a doctor to do checkups. They were told that they were going to get back shots, which were not vaccinations, but rather spinal taps to remove fluid from their spine. 25 years after the cure was discovered, they were still watching black men die for 25 years. 400 men, 40 spouses, 19 children, all impacted by syphilis, this sexually transmitted disease that's extremely deadly. I wish I could say that that's where everything turned around.
Right.
But around the time that the cure for syphilis was discovered, Guatemala started to experience a similar experiment. But this time, the United States government injected syphilis into 700 men and women. It starts to make you think,
right?
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Starts to make you question,
right,
motives, mm-hmm, when you're asked to do certain things.
That's
or
right.
Incentivized to do certain things.
Hesitance, right? That's right.
In 1951, Henrietta Lacks went to Johns Hopkins. She complained of issues, and they ended up having to cut a cervical tumor from her body. Henrietta Lacks died in 1951. But the cells that were cut from her tumor, we now call HeLa cells, that were used for chemo, for the polio vaccine, cloning, gene mapping, in vitro fertilization, research into the genes that cause cancer, research into the genes that suppress cancer. They've also helped develop drugs for treating herpes, leukemia, influenza, hemophilia, and Parkinson's disease. They've been used to study lactose digestion, STDs, appendicitis, human longevity, mosquito mating, and the negative cellular effects of working in sewers. Wow. Many, many, many lives.
That's right.
Henrietta Lacks saved.
That's right.
Yet there was no pressure to save her.
Wow.
I have to give thanks for Henrietta Lacks, because although she did not know that she would make an impact on so many of us, she's indeed made an impact on me. For 7 years, I went to a doctor who was a Black woman. When I was looking for a gynecologist, I said, no, 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 I want a Black woman. Because in my mind, I knew that our healthcare system has been at war with Black women. And I thought if I could find an ally, then perhaps my journey wouldn't be so rough. And oh, I found one, and she was great, and so many great accomplishments. I wish I could tell you the details, but I'll just say some big Black women in the entertainment industry endorsed her. And she was local. That first year that I went there, I said, hey, listen, I've been experiencing excruciating cramps since I was 13 years old. And I've had the bad days at school and the bad days at work and the nausea and been on the floor. And it's just bad. I know it's bad. And everyone's always said, you need to get on birth control. But I want to know what's going on with my body. And that doctor said, yeah, you know, cramps happen. It's fine. We can get you on some birth control. Her message went along with the same message I had been hearing for years. Everybody's got the same message. Everybody's got the same opinion. Good enough for me, right? Fast forward to the end of that appointment where she says, well, I do feel something kind of weird here. We need to check it out. My very first time seeing a gynecologist, I already had a fibroid tumor. Now, fibroids are common and usually aren't very, very damaging to the woman's body in some situations, but it was something I wanted to pay attention to. Throughout a course of 6 years, I kept asking about these cramps or this fibroid tumor, or something just doesn't seem right. And now I have migraines and there's other symptoms that just seem to get worse. And she goes, no big deal. We won't worry about it unless it gets like big. I said, well, how do you know how big it is if you haven't looked at it in 6 years?
Right.
Year 7 with her, I just felt like, okay, she's just not listening. Not listening to what I'm asking you or what I'm telling you. You're not willing to do the ultrasounds when I ask you. I'm paying for it. You know, what's the deal, lady? I started seeing her nurse practitioner, a white lady who listened, who knew. But last year during COVID, things got a little sticky and I decided to leave that doctor and go to a new doctor who wasn't located in a hospital that required me to come in for appointments. When I went to the new doctor and shared the same symptoms, my doctor immediately said, I think you're gonna have to have surgery. In November, I had that conversation. In January, I had that surgery. Come to find out, I have stage 4 endometriosis. For 7 years, that Black woman doctor told me that I was just fine. And because she looked like me, I believed her. Endometriosis is a very curious condition. 1 in 10 women have it. I wonder how many Black women have it. Endometriosis is not really explainable. We don't know exactly why it happens. We can only tell you what happens. And what happens is the uterus that typically holds a baby for a woman who's pregnant somehow develops lining outside and inside to protect the baby. It's only supposed to grow on the inside. So every month that a woman has a period, I bleed on the inside and the outside. In addition to that, that tissue not only comes out and just ends up in the wrong places, but then it starts to stick to different areas of the organs. A lot of people refer to this as a woman problem. The reality is that not only does it affect the reproductive organs, but sometimes this tissue breaks off and attaches to your lungs, your gallbladder, your heart, and many other organs. And if you have extreme cramps as a woman during your cycle, that is not normal. It's not a sign of fibroids. It's a sign of endometriosis. But they can only detect it if they do a surgery. Most doctors aren't going to do a surgery if they don't listen to you. The other thing they check for is your family history, but Black people don't like to share about their personal private issues. We've been so attacked that we don't even share with one another and we don't pass on the information.
Right.
It wasn't until I shared with everyone that I was having surgery that two great aunts, a grandparent, and other family members said, "Hey, me too." So you're a little late. Because had you told me that years ago, I would have known more about what to look for. Thankfully, I had a mother who shared with me all of her personal information to make sure that I had some sense of what was going on, which had I not had that, I probably would have completely avoided this issue until it was too late. This is the inside of me. And I don't mind you seeing. When you look at my actual ovaries here on the left is my bladder, where you can see little dots of endometriosis on the bladder. Here's my uterus, where a baby would be if I ever have one. And it's covered all over it. You can see a little bit of one of the ovaries also covered. The left ovary you can't even see because of how covered it is. Stage 4 is, as you hear with other things, the worst stage possible. When they opened me up and saw this, they immediately wanted to remove all the organs.
Mm.
And the fact that it was already on my bladder is a very big concern. Previous to that, I had already told them, like, I might want to have kids in the future, so let's avoid that if possible. So now I literally have to go through egg freezing and possibly in vitro fertilization that Henrietta Lacks made possible. We see this all the time, a constant cycle of Black women under attack within our medical fields, within the medical health fields. We even see it when it comes to maternal mortality and infant mortality when it's actually time to have kids. Black women are more than 3 times more likely to have a maternal death than white women in the United States. Just like Black men are 3 times more likely to die at the hands of the police. You see the trend? Even in the US, where the infant death rates for all age groups is shown to be dropping, Black infants still die at twice the rate as white infants. So what we see is that there is a consistent issue here. But it's not just the healthcare system itself, it's all the supplemental systems that go along with it. When we look at the education system, therein lies the problem. We see the racism embedded in the way that you're taught, and now here you are only doing what you were told. In addition to that, we don't teach critical thinking skills the way that we should. We teach to test. I should know I'm a teacher. Oftentimes, people do not have the skills to even be able to decipher and analyze information because they haven't been taught.
Right.
Knowledge is so important. It's the utmost foundation that you need. When we look at these systems at play, we also see that that system is impacted by your economy. You look at the racial wealth gap, you will see that we have lost generations of wealth, and that that gap is so significant that we would not be able to catch up for years and years and years.
Wow.
With policies from everything from the sharecropping policies and Andrew Johnson's land policies to the Social Security Acts and all of the many other things that have taken place to how housing covenants and restrictive housing covenants have been in function to redlining to make sure that the good marketplaces and the good stores are only in the good neighborhoods, which is why we're here at Gem City Market.
Right. Yeah.
Y'all can clap for that. Gem City Market was an answer to the problem. To be able to, for $10 a month, have your own personal grocery store for us, by us.
That's right.
That has things that are going to be healthy for us, that get you back to the original type of diet that we should be on all along.
Yes.
I know. You love the American burgers and your chicken wings.
Right.
But the plant-based diet is where we come from. I didn't say I was vegan. I have not been that disciplined yet. However, what I will say is knowledge is power.
That's right.
When you know that the average meats at the random grocery stores, or not even real stores, the Save-A-Lots, the AMPMs, the Main Marts, the Mini Marts, all of those markets, when you know that that meat has been expired, that the tumors have been cut out of it, that it's been repackaged and it's not even the right color, that says something about why diabetes and heart disease is so high in the Black community. It's not because we're Black. These are not genetic diseases, as in you're automatically going to have them because a person in your family has them. You're more likely to have them because of the lifestyle.
That's right.
So when we start looking at the expired foods and the foods that have been altered, or the foods that have been chemically and genetically altered that have hormones and things in it, people didn't used to have issues with milk until recently. Now, lactose intolerance is very popular in the Black community. What changed? When we start to unpack the many different aspects of life that play a role, we realize that it all comes back down to intersectionality. The different groups you belong to, the different aspects of life that play a role in your walk, played a role in what you eat on the regular, where you can shop, what access you have, the access to the knowledge. How do I know how to cook? I know how to cook because my mama taught me. We know about that because our grandmothers taught us. But in this world today, it's getting more and more difficult to pass on the knowledge. There are more distractions and more systems somehow conveniently set up to get in our way. It's important that we have the knowledge and then that we are willing to share it with others so that you don't have the same issues as the next person. So what do we do? How do we deal with a system that is warring against us? What are the weapons we can use to fight back? Advocacy. It is important to do your due diligence. Do your due diligence means do the research and acquire the knowledge. And if you don't have the knowledge, you acquire it elsewhere. Who is a credible source? Who can I trust? Who can I talk to as I prepare for this event or this surgery or this doctor's appointment? Is there someone who could represent me if I needed it? Before I went to that surgery, I called one of my friends who was a nurse. I told her what hospital I would be in. I told her who my doctor was. I told her exactly what procedure I was having and how to find me. And I told her, if anything happens, I want you there because you're in this field and you know how to advocate for me. Do your due diligence when it comes to researching the facilities that you go to. If you're looking for a doctor, we have Five Rivers right here in Dayton with Black people who care about Black people, making sure that you're getting taken care of properly. Do your due diligence to make sure other people have the knowledge as well. Make sure that they know, hey, sis, you're getting older. Young girls are becoming women and starting their cycles at a much younger age. 8-year-olds are having babies. Why are you waiting until that little girl is 19 to take her to the doctor? If her body is doing things at 8, she needs to be in the doctor at 8. So she not only understands the responsibility to take care of her body and the responsibility that she now has of procreation and the responsibility to choose whether or not she should or should not be procreating right now, but she also needs to know, because these issues started when I was just 13. We need to do our due diligence to tell that guy, hey, bruh, it's okay to go to the doctor. That is masculine. That is sexy. That is healthy. Go to the doctor. And have somebody with you. Be willing to do the due diligence to be that person, because we need that. Another weapon that we have is to make the invisible visible. Sometimes we don't know the exact words to articulate our needs. Sometimes we don't understand the medical jargon. Again, calling spinal taps back shots was an easy way to say, oh, don't worry, you just need this little vaccine. So if you don't understand the jargon, then you need to make the invisible visible. I don't know what you're talking about. I need you to put it in plain terms. I need someone else to go over this with me so I can make sure that this makes sense. Hospitals have advocates, use them. Making the invisible visible might just mean, will you document in my chart that you're refusing to give me that treatment or to run that test? I just want to document it. Making the invisible visible might mean wearing that suit or that nice outfit to the doctor when you get there. Why we have to do that? I don't want to do that. I'm not saying that you have to do that. But it makes the invisible visible, because you treat me nicer when I look like this. And then maybe you could ask that question, would you have treated me the same if I had on sweatpants? Making the invisible visible might mean just saying out loud, well, these doctors aren't listening to me. I'm not being heard. I think I need a second opinion. Go get that second opinion. The more the merrier.
That's right.
Please go get the second opinion, the third opinion. Keep talking to people. That's the only way that you're going to get to the resolution that you need. Document, document, document everything. From what you're eating and how you're feeling to how this happened, how to describe it. If you don't know, you should learn. Some people don't know how to describe their pain. Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it constant? Is it random? Some people don't know what to say. Do your due diligence. Figure it out. And again, the more the merrier, the more people that are on your team to help you, the better. Don't think that you're burdening someone or that you're bothering someone. Instead, you need to think that we need to be united, that we need to have the mentality of collective responsibility, where we need to take on one another's problems as our own and where we need to stand together. Speak up and speak out. If you're not sharing your story with the next person, How are you helping anyone learn? And what did you go through all of that for? It is so important that we recognize that we are warriors in this battle, that we have an option to fight or we have an option to sit back and allow these things to continue without ever bringing knowledge to the table. And just so you know, now that you know, you're responsible.
That's right.
It is important that we as a community decide that it is our time to unite.
That's right.
It's our time to come together. The principle of Ubuntu suggests that I am because you are. I exist because we exist. I can't be all that I can be until you can be all that you are. We need each other. And so if we stick together, we educate one another, if we invest in our own communities, if we share the knowledge, we'll learn that there are healthcare systems that are available for us, that there are insurance options and sliding scales and other advocates in places all around here. We have to take advantage of those and stop servicing the places that have never been there to serve us. Planned Parenthood had a founder who literally created her business out of Hitler's ideology. She said, figure out how we can create a superior race by eliminating Black people through abortion. Yet the Black community goes to Planned Parenthood so often without even knowing, because they're offering other services. They're never just going to tell you, we don't want you here.
That's right.
They never have.
Right.
It is important for us to use the knowledge. And so I encourage you today to recognize that Black women's lives matter.
That's right.
And we are all warriors in this fight against the medical apartheid.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us for our first Knowledge Cypher conference. We were fed well by Professor Taylor Curtis, and we look forward to having more of these conferences as we go on through the year. Please like and follow us on our social media platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. You can also join our Patreon platform for as little as $3 a month. That will help us to, of course, produce these powerful programs.
Streaming messages and music from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan worldwide, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download the Final Call Radio app and take us everywhere. On your phone, on your computer, on your tablet, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also log on to finalcall.com and click the Listen Live button or finalcallradio.com. Final Call Radio, the official voice of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam.